Hello and welcome to the Arise Ministries podcast. I'm Lisa Da Silva, and today we're having a Q&A about adoption. I'm sitting here with Erin Kessler. Erin Kessler lives in Vancouver, Washington, with her husband and five children. She is an Arise Ministries Collective board member. She also is a wedding and portrait photographer for almost a decade here in this area. And one of the things that I love about my friend Erin is her collection of Bibles. She is a Bible and pen junkie. I've seen them in action on her desk, and so we are kindred spirits.
I think there's four on my kitchen table right now. Four Bibles that I was using this morning.
Which four Bibles are they?
I have the giant one.
You did not plan this.
The giant one that you gave me for my birthday, which I'm still
not
even sure how to use.
Your Hebrew and Greek lexicon?
Yeah. And I had the inductive study Bible, just my regular Bible. And then I also had the keyword study Bible, which
I love that one.
Because it can help you understand specific words better.
I know. You know that Erin and I are friends because we can already start talking about other things from the beginning, but we have a shared love of Bibles and the Word of God. And I have been privileged in this life to walk through a long-term friendship with Erin from the beginning of her adoption story. Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to tell us about the beginning, but when you started bringing those babies home. And so if you could take us back to the beginning a little bit of your adoption story, how did you as a couple decide to adopt, and what were some pivotal elements of that process?
Mm. Well, I was actually thinking about this morning, that I think the seeds of adopting or caring for people without anyone actually started way sooner than I realized it was happening. Because I was thinking back this morning to, like, my grandparents, and there was always a family at Christmas who had nowhere to go for Christmas. Or there were several young women who I remember living in our town who were about to have a baby, and their mom didn't live here. And my mom became like a mom to them, and she would be there when their babies were born. And those early days of having a newborn, she would be at their homes and bring them, making them dinner, which is what she did when I had babies. But she did it for other people before she ever did for me. And I didn't really notice that was what was happening. But now that I look back, I can see that there was always a value of just caring for people who didn't have anybody and didn't have a family around. So then my husband Matt and I went to Nepal on a mission trip with Royal Servants International. So I'm sure there's some Royal Servants out there listening. We went as leaders with high school students to Nepal for a summer in 2001. So we had just been married.
Newlyweds in Nepal.
It was our first grand adventure together. And so we spent a summer, better part of a summer there. And we did a lot of just hanging out with kids. Lots of kids living on the street there. We spent time in an orphanage. We spent time with an organization called the Peace Rehabilitation Center. I don't even know if they still exist. I should have looked first, but they cared for young girls who had been rescued literally out of brothels in India. Nepali girls, but there was an open border between Nepal and India. So there was a high trafficking at that time, young girls, like as young as 4 or 5 years old. And so this was a home where those girls could come and recover and be restored. And it was a beautiful place, and they loved Jesus there. And then they did a lot of community education also, just telling people when a nice man comes to town and offers you money to take to marry your daughter, that's not really what they're doing. So we just came home very aware that that was happening in the world. And it was kind of strange. From that point on, that was just a normal part of our conversation, that adoption was in our family plan. And it was just, it was never like a sit down deciding moment. We just came home, both of us, with this very clear knowledge that that was where we were headed, and that God had put that on our hearts. And we just, I think it's actually pretty rare for a couple
to simultaneously
feel the same thing on that. Like, usually there's someone who's leading that conversation. And for us, it really was
So early in your marriage, because before of we an had awareness experience.
Yeah. So we knew pretty specifically that we wanted to adopt a little girl from somewhere where that vulnerability existed, that those risks existed. So that was kind of something specific on our hearts.
And so you knew that you were going to adopt. Skip forward then a few years and tell us so that we can all have a visual. What does your family look like now? Who are we talking about?
So now we have 5 children. We have 2 biological boys who are 14 and 12. And then we have 3 adopted kiddos. Lucy is 9 and she's from Ethiopia. And then we have twin 5-year-olds who I just am speechless with an description.
I know them. A boy and girl
that we adopted through foster care here locally. Mm-hmm. So
you have experience in both international adoption as well as local adoption.
Yeah.
I just want to pause here for a minute and say, Erin and I have talked about this podcast and we really hope that it's an encouragement for people who are considering adoption, people who have adopted, people who aren't sure if they're considering it or not, and just maybe have some questions or want to hear some things. And it's also for those of us who are in the community of people who have adopted.
If you care about anyone.
If you care about people.
Who has adopted or is adopting.
This is a podcast for you. And so we're going to start, though, with some practical steps. We want to know, Erin, what did that look like? What are the practical steps involved in adoption? How do you choose an organization? Do you need an organization? Is there a home study? Paperwork? I asked you the question, paperwork? But I remember seeing all of your paperwork. So tell us little bit about that process.
So much paperwork.
Not for the faint of heart.
Yes, I think that it's a yes to all of that. There are so many different ways to go about it. You can hire people to do the paperwork for you. You can do it yourself. It really depends on what route you're taking.
What would the first step be? For someone listening that's thinking...
So for us, we went to an open house at an adoption agency that had a variety of options and countries. And I actually don't know if they did domestic because that was not high on our list at the time. We felt pretty specifically called to international adoption. So there happened to be an agency here in Portland, close to where we live, that was having an open house. And we knew someone who had used that organization.
Okay, so you knew someone had a connection.
Yep, we knew a family that was really an acquaintance, but they had just brought a little boy home from Ethiopia and they had used this agency in Portland. So I was like, you know, she shared about it one day on Facebook and I clicked on it and was like, oh, they have an open house.
How old were your biological boys at this time?
1 and 3 at
one
the time.
1 and 3. Okay. So it's already a busy house for you.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think most parents do this where they have some idea of how spaced apart they want their kids to be, but give yourself lots of time with adoption because it takes a long time.
A long time.
Especially international adoption, I think, it's just a process. So, and that's different for every country, has their own rules, different papers they want to see. So there's just time.
So you went to this open house and you decided then that you were going to start the process of adopting from Ethiopia, or how
did
that?
So we actually, my acquaintance had used the same agency and she had shared something about their website on Facebook. And so I had just kind of been like, oh, that's something we're thinking about someday. And I clicked on it and it popped right up that this particular organization was starting an adoption program in Nepal, which had been closed for years. They didn't allow
out of country. I got shivers. I didn't know this part of your story.
They didn't allow out of country adoptions. And I actually think it was a really short-lived thing. Mm-hmm. They don't now, I don't think. But that just was like, oh my gosh, this is what we've been waiting for. And it actually turned out that the timing of it just didn't line up for us. The program didn't end up opening when they thought it would. They had very specific requirements that you could only have one other child, and we already had 2. So there was just some kind of natural disqualifications for us. But that was really a turning point for us, was like, okay, we're here. The door is opened and we're just going to keep walking. So we considered a few different countries, and it Ethiopia just felt like the best fit. So that was kind of where we landed.
Did you consider a variety of agencies, or did you stay with that one? And how did you make that decision?
We didn't at first, but I wish we would have.
Okay.
Because we ended up not staying with that agency. Not because there was anything wrong with it. It just turned out to not be the best fit for our family. And so I reached out. I made friends, which is something that comes fairly easily to me. I started reading blogs. I found other moms who were local in our area. I think on Facebook, or, you know, people would say, oh, you should talk to my friend so-and-so who has adopted. And so I just would.
You made those connections.
I reached out, and through getting to know some other families that had gone through various agencies, there was one that kept coming back up. And so I researched that one, and that was called Gladney Center for Adoption, and they're in Fort Worth, Texas. And that they were the ones who helped us.
So you live in the Portland, Oregon area. We're in Clark County, Vancouver, Washington. But you were using an agency that you loved that was somewhere
not
else
here,
in the U.S.
No. We talked on the phone a lot, which all of them do. So I think most agencies work with people who, it doesn't have to be where you live.
That's good to know. Because I think a lot of us don't know that.
No.
So, you found your agency, you connected with other people to help you do that, you decided on Ethiopia, and then, is it the home study? What do we do next?
So we actually did our home study with the first agency before, so we had that part completed when we started working with Gladney.
And tell us, what is a home study for
those who don't know? More paperwork than you've ever imagined. It really is, I feel like a better word is investigation. You're essentially, they are looking into every corner of your home and life, really to help you determine what a great placement would be, what a good match for your family would be, and if you essentially are a safe place for a child to be placed. So that was questions about how we were raised as kids, what our parents' marriages were like, what is our marriage like, what are conflicts we have with each other. You know, our philosophies of parenting, all kinds of things. And then literally like a home inspection where they're checking to make sure you have your medicines locked up and you have child safety locks on your chemicals and things like that to just make sure your home is safe. So that process, though, was months. Months of, you have to gather paperwork like your birth certificates, and you have to have a background check from your local sheriff. That's all part of your home study. So just gathering documents, I felt like it was like a full-time job. I was at my bank all the time getting things notarized, going to the courthouse for our marriage license, all kinds of documents.
So lots of work
lots
in the
of
home
work.
Study. I love, though, that you prefaced it all by saying, it's really something to help you.
Yes.
Because they're helping you decide, is this
And it's,
something?
I mean, it's hard to be grilled. It's hard for someone to say, tell me about the conflicts in your marriage.
And what if, let's just be super real here, what if you didn't come from a healthy home? What if they ask, what was your parents' marriage like? And you're like, actually, it was really rotten. Does that impact, do you think,
I don't feel like it impacts their decision. I mean, they're not making a decision. They're just documenting what you say. And then essentially that goes to the country and they decide if you can adopt the child. So we submit, with international adoptions, you put together what's called a dossier. So it includes...
Spell it for us.
Because it's D-O-S-S-I-E-R. I think it's a French word.
Yeah, okay. But it's the same for every country. They call it dossier.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that just means it's like a packet of certified documents. So, but it was literally like a ream of paper thick. I actually really love office supplies, which you've already heard about my love for pens. So to me, I enjoyed that process because I enjoyed having my binder with all of the dividers for different sections of paperwork.
I remember your binder.
I decorated it all beautiful and had my special paper clips and things. So I really enjoyed checking off like
those boxes. Do people
on the list.
Who don't enjoy that
you
hire
can,
someone?
Yeah, you can hire someone, It does cost money to hire someone, so that was a way for us to save money. Mm-hmm. And I was a stay-at-home mom, so I had the time to do it. But a lot of people do, and our agency actually recommended if you want to hire someone. They had several that they had worked with before. And I think actually some of them were parents who had been through the process and enjoyed it and started doing it for other families.
And knew how to do it. And so now you could subcontract that out if you felt like you didn't have the time or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so give us a timeline. So you guys choose your agency. And from choosing your agency and starting with the home study, what time were you looking? Mm-hmm. Where are you?
So we started our process. It was in July when we went to our very first open house. And it was the following May. So almost a year later, 10 months before we went onto an actual waiting list.
10 months before you were even waiting.
That was like the green light. You now have the green light to adopt a kid from Ethiopia. And every country has different things they require. So some countries might go faster. They might not have as many documents they want. Others may have more. I know like China, for example, I think was one that required a lot of other documentation. So, and you know, they are constantly changing. Countries are changing their regulations all the time. So it was about 10 months just to be put on the waiting list. And then it was 7 months for us to be matched with our daughter, Lucy, which was super fun. Our agency called us on Christmas morning to tell us that they had a match for us, which was super fun.
On Christmas morning.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably knew like a day before, but they saved it for Christmas Day.
And how old was she at that time? So you received a match.
She was about 4 months old at that time.
And can you tell me about that process?
Yeah.
So when you say you get a match, are you getting a picture? Or are you getting
Get pictures. Okay. And then the way it worked with our agency and program was, one of the things I loved about our agency, Gladney, was they said it all the time, we are in the business of finding families for kids who need families. In other words, like, you're not baby shopping.
Mm-hmm. Amen. I love that.
Their goal was to put kids in families and not necessarily helping families find kids, if that makes sense. That might sound funny, but to me, that was actually really important. It felt really ethical to me to know that they had a really good mission about what they were doing. Mm-hmm. So they basically propose a match.
Okay.
And then we had time to accept it, or we could have said, we don't feel like this is the right fit. I don't know anyone who does that or who has turned down a match. I'm sure that happens, but because we did. We got an email, or she called us and said, we have a referral for you. That's what it's commonly called, where they're basically referring a child for your approval. And she said, I want you to open your email, and I've sent you...
It's Christmas morning.
It's like a little summary about her, and then I think there was like 4 or 5 pictures of her. And then we had, I think, 7 days to let them know if we wanted to move forward with her specifically. So,
can I take us back a little bit to the process? And when you said you're given this match or a proposal... At some point in that process, are you able to state sort of what you're able
to?
Okay, tell us about
that
a little bit.
That was part of our application process with our agency, and it is the weirdest form to fill out, to check or not check certain boxes was actually kind of agonizing, because there's everything on there, a boy, girl, age ranges, disabilities, health concerns. So everything from, we're willing to accept special needs, we're willing for medically needy children. Mm. There's such a wide variety of things that we had not really even considered. And it's kind of hard to say, I'm only going to take this, was kind of weird.
Yeah, that would feel weird.
It was weird. And I've had other moms call me when they're filling theirs out, like, is it really okay for me to mark this? Because it just feels awkward. But it really is a tool that those agencies use to make the best match for that child.
So. Do some people say, I don't care? I don't care. Male
absolutely.
Or female,
I'm open to everything.
Oh, and someone would check the box.
So for us, we were everything. Pretty specific. We set a healthy baby girl under 12 months.
Because you had a one-year-old and a three-year-old at home, or just what you were called to do at that moment.
Yeah, and what I've said to other moms filling that out is it does feel weird, but it really is important because every family is different. You know what your capacity is. And for us, it was important for us to keep the birth order of our kids at that time. So that was a 12-month or younger girl, you know, and we had already known that God had put the girl part on our heart. So
people don't have to feel bad checking those boxes.
It's important to be really truthful, I think. Yeah.
So the first question in our Q&A that I asked you was about this process and how it all started. Mm-hmm. If you could give us a summary. So if someone is just starting out, they don't know where to begin, as an experienced international adoption, we're talking kind of specifically right now.
I can't believe that was almost 10 years ago.
It was 10 years ago
that I was doing paperwork. Yes.
Where should they start?
I think that if it's something on your mind, you're already more in tune than you think you are. Probably you've been hearing people talk about it.
And it's tugging at your heart
every time you're like, oh, they're adopting. That's something that it's just going in the back of your mind. So I think start paying attention. When someone says, oh, my friend is adopting, ask them to connect you. Or ask what agency they're using. Start paying attention to those things. To me, personal credibility was really important with an agency. So knowing people who felt I can put my trust in these people to match me with a child, it's a big deal. This is your family forever. So knowing that someone is trustworthy was really important to me, and that people had had a great and successful experience that was ethical and friendly. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to be spending a lot of time working with these people, and they're helping you build your family. So it's important to feel good about them. So I would say make friends, ask questions, ask. Don't be shy about asking people if they'll introduce you to their friend. I've made lots of new friends because my friends have said when they meet someone who's adopting, they're like, you should talk to my friend, Erin. And not everyone is an open book.
Yeah.
And I think you have to be prepared that maybe not everyone wants to share it with you because people come to adoption for different reasons and they may not be the same as yours. So some of it might feel more private to people, but I'm an open book. So I looked for other people who were open books to ask my questions to. And then, I mean, Google.
Google. What an incredible resource that you can start looking.
And it has improved so much even just from 10 years ago. Start looking at countries. If you have any kind of inkling of what country you want to do, start looking for agencies that work in those countries. What is their reputation?
At finding people who have adopted from those countries before.
I read a lot of blogs. I think there's still a lot of people who blog about their whole process. Mine is still out there on the internet, even though it's 10 years old.
Maybe we can add a link to that on this.
Five by Faith.
Yeah.
And it chronicles everything from our start to finish.
But that's so helpful. Yeah. Thank you for being so open. Yeah. Especially, you know, today too, just being able to help us know what to expect. And so it's been a few years since you started your chosen family. You welcomed your children home. I want us to talk about some of the joys and struggles an adoptive family might encounter. And Erin, during this time too, we know that you had a very different experience with the international adoption than you did with a local adoption. And so in this time, let's talk a little bit about that as well. So tell us about your youngest.
Yeah, so they are twins, boy and a girl, and they have been home with us coming up on 5 years.
I can't even believe it.
I can't either.
5 years.
Especially with them, time goes especially fast. They live a fast-paced life, full of shenanigans. So it has gone really fast. But and that process was very quick compared to our international.
Yeah.
But there's also been completely different challenges than there was with our first international adoption. But I have to say the first joyful thing that comes to my mind is I feel like during Lucy's adoption, that it changed my life, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, seeing God's provision and faithfulness is just one of those, like, anchor landmark moments in my life where I can, any other hard thing that comes, I can look back and say, we can trust God because he was so faithful. Mm-hmm. And there was, for us personally, we were a single income family. My husband was a pretty new teacher who makes no money, mm-hmm. right? There was no way we could afford it on our own. And we knew from the beginning that we felt, for us, part of the reason that God called us to it was because it was supposed to be a testimony of his faithfulness mm-hmm. and his provision. And so from the very start, we knew that we only were going down this road if it was for God's glory, and that because there was no room for it to happen any other way, it would be. Mm-hmm. If it happened, it would be for God's glory because mm-hmm. there could be no other explanation, because we did not have the resources to make it happen. So that it felt kind of impossible, and we knew it was impossible, but we felt like God was asking us, do you trust me with this impossible mm-hmm. thing? Because then the only way is if it's God's way. So we knew that's what we were saying yes to, which is pretty scary to sign away your life on paper for something you know you can't possibly make happen on your own.
And what an incredible testimony.
And he did it.
Faith, he did do it.
And there were so many times where, you know, I'd go to the bank. I remember one time I made a deposit at the bank after our friends had this surprise auction mm-hmm. for us. And that was actually towards the end of we had just gotten on the waiting list, I think. And I had like almost $12,000 cash in my hands. And I went to the bank. This just makes me giggle.
In an envelope.
Yeah. And I put it in. And they came back, and the branch manager came back and was like, we actually need you to sign this document because these kind of deposits just don't happen in your account, so we actually need some kind of statement about where it came from.
What did you write? You're like, God gave it to us.
I totally did. I told these ladies, and there's like three ladies at the window of the bank listening to me going like, I don't even know what else to say except for that God gave us.
We had a surprise party last night.
I told them
the
whole story, and I just said, God.
Yeah.
It was God. And about a week later, I got a note from those bank tellers saying, we have never heard of something like that happening, and just thank you so much for telling it to us. So, like, just those opportunities along the way to total strangers gave us opportunities to give God credit, and we took every chance we had.
Beautiful story.
So that
God's
is, and that has happened in so many other ways other than finances. Even after we've had our kids home, we still needed God's provision. It just wasn't necessarily in dollars, but grace, patience, sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
all of the above. So he's always provided. One of my other favorite pieces has been, and I think a lot of people ask themselves this, is how well our other kids do. Bringing new kids into our family. And our boys, for them, I don't think it's this way for every family, but for ours, they asked no questions. It was just how we made our family, and they have loved them the same as their biological brothers without question. And
you guys talked so openly about it. So when they were only 1 and 3 was when you started this process.
And they really don't remember.
They always knew they were getting a sister and that you were filling out all these papers and trucking them around with you to the bank and all these places to bring Lucy home.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's always been there.
Incredible.
And I know sometimes we check in with our boys every once in a while because odd things do happen. People ask weird questions that don't occur to them. Like recently someone on the bus my daughter had said that this Jack was her brother, but Jack's white, Lucy's from Ethiopia. And they were like, that's not your brother. And she was like, Mom, they wouldn't believe us and we don't know why. And it never occurred to either of them why someone wouldn't believe that they were brother and sister.
How beautiful is that you had to explain?
Yeah, so I said, well, do you think it's maybe because you don't look alike? And they were like, oh. But because it's just not in their mind.
The boys didn't see that difference.
So that's been a huge blessing, is that they're very loving brothers, and they have really accepted the other kids like it was a perfectly typical thing to do.
And I remember, if I can just selfishly share a joy, It was when you guys came home with her. When you, oh, look at me. I'm going to lose it. Because for me, it was, you know, it was two things. It was such a beautiful answer to prayer to have this little girl that we'd all loved already and been praying for. But to also see a community that loved you.
Oh, gosh. And I don't even know how many people were there. It was packed.
It was really packed. People kept their kids up late.
It was late. Yeah. Because we were flying standby, which I don't recommend.
Right. So she's not recommending standby if you're going to bite the bullet.
Our flight from, like, L.A. to Portland was a stand. Someone had given us, which, as I said, we were broke, so we didn't turn down anything for free. But after you've been on a plane for 20 hours with an infant with parasites...
Yes. Yeah.
This you just want to get home.
Right. And then you come off the plane and there are 45 people.
Yeah. There were some people.
Just tear-filled because of the miracle and beauty of that.
And I felt like our community was so invested with us. So it really, it wasn't just us celebrating. Everyone had a little bit of ownership in it, bringing her home. So,
and that's probably not like that for everyone. We don't want to give this depiction that... everyone will be excited for you or everyone will show up at the airport.
I do think we had a pretty uniquely awesome experience with our community. We were also pretty communicative. I feel like we shared pretty openly what we needed from people and what the opportunities were to help us.
So that could have added to that community joy. We felt like, I felt like I was part of your process.
Yes.
And you invited me
into
that.
Actually, I think I will share when we get to a couple questions later, like, if you're not called to adoption, how you can still be a part of adoption. So, but yeah, we threw a wide net and invited people into it with us because we had to. And that was part of how God provided.
And it's so amazing that you had this incredible community and that your funds were met and the Lord proved himself faithful and your boys were loving and accepting, but I can also imagine that it's not all joy.
Not all been Skittles and rainbows.
So tell us about some of those struggles.
Gosh, there's been many struggles. I actually feel like it's probably pretty even joy and struggle.
Because family's hard.
Family's hard anyway.
Yeah.
Being a parent is hard. I think in the beginning, it still is an emotional roller coaster. I feel like on a day-to-day basis, even though we're almost a decade in with one of our kiddos, there's still a lot of feelings about a lot of things every day that are just unique to our child.
Because of their...
It's not a fairy tale. Right. I mean, you don't step off the plane to all your friends cheering with balloons and posters, and then it becomes a fairy tale. Like, you're bringing home a child who has lost everything. Mm-hmm. All the people they know, the language they know, the surroundings they know, their home. I mean, everything about it. They've lost everything. And that reality is very painful for a child.
And Aaron, Lucy was 9 months old, and you're saying... She lost everything. Mm-hmm. So there might be some people that say...
I think there's a myth. I think I believed a myth at that time that everything would be okay when we got her home. Because she was a baby, she wouldn't remember the traumatic things. And she doesn't remember. And I'm not going to share too many of her specifics because that's hers to tell. But for any child who ends up needing a family has been through devastating stuff. So... there's a lot of healing that has to happen. There's a lot of trust that has to be built. And that is just a high investment parenting is what we call it. We are depositing a lot and hoping that someday it grows, you know?
And you are someone I know. Like, you read the books, you did the homework, you studied these people's blogs, you talked to people. You were very, very proactive.
I was.
And it was still... hard.
Yeah, I felt like there's nothing I really could have done to prepare more. I felt like I was pretty committed to being prepared in every way, even the hard stuff. I looked at the hard stuff. I read about the hard stuff. And I think there's just a point where book knowledge becomes life. And you have to start, it's where the rubber meets the road. You have to figure out how to implement all these things you've been reading about. And then the actual pain of a child's grief. And as a parent, of any of your children, biological mm-hmm. or adopted, when your child hurts, you hurt. Mm-hmm. And so it was emotional.
And there are resources mm-hmm. out there just for our listeners, whether you are an adoptive parent mm-hmm. or considering it, or the community that surrounds mm-hmm. these adoptive families. We can't get into all of the psychology behind it and all of that stuff here.
It's a rabbit hole.
Yeah, but, you know, things about attachment mm-hmm. theory and separation yeah. and even infant mm-hmm. trauma mm-hmm. and the way that those things affect kids. I think what we want people to know is there is a reality of that yeah. mm-hmm. and that you are bringing that
yeah.
into your
yes.
home.
Into your home, yeah. And there's a lot of baggage that mm-hmm. comes with it, even with a brand new baby. You know, a child who was just born, I think even with a domestic adoption, mm-hmm. the reality of a child being separated from a parent changes things for a child. Even if it's the most loving, peaceful transition, mm-hmm. it's still a very huge transition with grief and loss attached to it. So.
And I think it's also a great time to remember, too, that everyone's experience is going to be mm-hmm. different.
Yeah.
And I think about all of these families that I know who have adopted, and each one has a bit of a different struggle, yeah. a different joy. Mm-hmm. And so we can do all of this learning.
The common thing is we both have joys and struggles.
Yes.
But they look different.
But they look sure. different. And mm-hmm. so there can't be, I think there yeah. can be an expectation of some things, mm-hmm. but maybe.
Well, and even like in my own home, that's true. Mm-hmm. Like, our daughter's experience prepared me a certain way that I expected it to be the same with our twins. And it was
different.
So different. Different struggles. You know, with Lucy, we had to work a lot harder with bonding and attachment. The twins were like
mm-hmm. so seamless. So you thought already, yeah. right?
So
I was prepared
for it to be hard, like bonding with them. And it wasn't. They just attached right to us. Mm-hmm. And so that was different. But then there's been different struggles, completely different from our daughter's struggles. So every single child is different.
I so appreciate and I'd love to draw attention to this, because you said earlier it's her story to tell mm-hmm. and I'm not going to divulge mm-hmm. that right now. And I feel like, Erin, you have done such a beautiful job of opening up your life to other people so that they can see some of the realities, the joys, the struggles, mm-hmm. so that they can come alongside, and also protecting all five of your kids. Mm-hmm. You truly adhere to this idea that their story is theirs to tell. And I love the way that you mm-hmm. respect that. And I think that really leads us into this question that I wanted to ask you next, and we've alluded to some of these things already. So many of our listeners may be friends, mm-hmm. family, neighbors, even people just passing you by in the grocery store,
yes.
the surrounding church community, someone who's adopted or is considering adoption. And I'd love for you to give us some wisdom. So those mm-hmm. of us who I don't have adopted children.
Yeah.
What can you say to me? What is a way that I can come alongside you? Mm-hmm. Maybe even if you don't mind, can you give me some tips? What should I say? What yeah. shouldn't I say? Yes. What should I do? What shouldn't I do?
We had a fun family discussion when I posed them those questions.
So you asked your family.
I asked my family.
I love them. That.
So do's, pray for them, pray a lot, maybe more than you have for anybody else ever. Pray about finances, pray for the child that they don't know yet, pray for their family to be stable. Mm-hmm. I feel like stability, because it's going to get rocky in most, for various reasons at different times, but strong foundations is important. Lots of prayer. Be excited for them. I think just like when a friend tells you she's going to have a baby, this family's expecting too.
Right.
So sometimes I remember, not so much in my friend group, but I was expecting my daughter from Ethiopia at the same time other friends were pregnant. And I remember it feeling like, don't forget about me.
Right. I'm having a
baby
too.
We're having a baby girl too. So just to be aware that you see them, that they're expecting. encourage them. I remember one thing that was so encouraging to me, especially international adoption. I imagine it's the same for most domestic. There's just like cycles of waiting. So it's like you get to the end of one process, might be your home study, and then there's another wait to get on the waiting list. Or then you're on the waiting list and there's the wait to be matched.
Feels
with
like
a child.
Roller coaster.
It's this big roller coaster. And I remember we were coming up towards the end of being able to travel to go bring Lucy home. We were matched with her, and other families that were matched around the same time with us were already traveling to get their kiddos, because stuff happens in country that we have zero control over. You know, like, we need a document from this town,
they
and it's like, are you flying it by pigeon?
Right.
Because that's what it felt like. Like, there was no fax, there was no email in the rural communities of Ethiopia.
So many,
like,
unknowns.
It's like, are you sending a pony rider? Yeah. What's happening? So we're just waiting for some random document, and there's nothing that can move forward until you have it. And we had just found that out, and I was just feeling so frustrated. Like, she is over there without a family, and we are here waiting. Like, what is going on? And I remember, you just knew. I was like, we were just bummed out. And so you invited our family to go to the beach for the weekend, just really as kind of a distraction, like, come have some fun. And it just meant so much to me that somebody cared that we were sad and bummed out, and that they just wanted to do something to cheer us up. So just little things. Bring your friend a coffee.
Right.
Let her know that see what she's going through.
The wait.
Yeah.
It's like the due date that's never coming.
Past due.
Yeah. But a lot more even paperwork and investment.
Yes. Yeah. It's a roller coaster. So I think just letting people know, because it takes so long, longer than having a baby, that I think sometimes other people forget that you're still waiting.
And I do believe there's a huge difference here that we need to acknowledge in this adoption process when someone's waiting, because I just said, yeah, like the due date that never comes. The difference is, your child is experiencing things still. They're not just in the womb, safe and protected. And I have a sister who's adopted, and I have you who's adopted, and I am going to get emotional here, because for me, just as an aunt and a friend, that was hard enough. Waiting for them to come home.
Yeah.
And wondering what they were experiencing. Yeah. Are they being cared for the way we would care for them. And so the waiting in light of this coming alongside is harder. I'm just going to go out there
and say it. I felt
like
there was a lot of grief, like grieving.
Missing time.
Yeah.
You were missing time.
I felt like that was probably some of the more questioning times in my walk with God, where I was just like, Lord, like, I don't get it. How is this your best plan? Because it cannot be what's best for her to be sitting there with no family, like with no mom to tuck her in at night. Like that just did not compute for me. And I remember just laying my big, ugly questions out there for the Lord, which I'm a big proponent of, like, God can handle our big, ugly questions. They don't scare him. They're nothing new to him. He is not going to hear something from me that he has never heard before.
Right.
So, I think God can handle our biggest, darkest questions. And he was faithful, and we were able to see later how the timing of things was his timing. And even though we couldn't grasp it, it was still his timing. So, those were some of the hard things.
Let's talk. You know, you might not want to bring this up but you talked earlier about finances, and that is hard for someone who is contemplating adoption, and you guys were able to just say, all right, Lord, we're jumping in. We're going to trust that you will provide that. As a surrounding community, we can support that too.
Yeah. And I feel like there's so many ways to be generous in that way. You know, for us, like, we had a garage sale, and people who never gave us cash, but they brought an old dresser that they didn't need anymore and dropped it off in my front yard, or baby clothes that their kids had grown out of, or dishes they didn't have room for. Like, they gave what they had to give. And that was sometimes money. We did have people who would randomly, it was always right when we needed it. We would be like, okay, we've got $2,000 due for this next thing, and we literally don't know where it's going to come from. And then a check would show up in our mail. Or an anonymous donor would might like. I remember one day after church, my dad handed me an envelope with $2,000 in it and just said, someone asked me to give this to you and I can't tell you who it is.
That's so
and
amazing.
That happened all right. the time. Like right. And I realize that is not everyone's story, but I felt like it was part of God's intended story for us. Mm-hmm.
You also, though, I feel like you and Matt did not ever make an assumption that the finances were someone else's responsibility.
Yeah.
So what I saw you also do was...
What didn't I do?
Well, Erin is so crafty. And so you were making t-shirts. Uh-huh. You were making
things. I did Christmas bazaars.
You did Christmas bazaars.
That didn't sell very much.
But all of these things that you were really working hard. Yeah. You were working hard to raise yes. those funds. So yes. I just wanted to put that out there because it's, again, another testimony mm-hmm. of you saying we believe God can do it. But I'm willing to do yes. the hard work,
yeah, we did work
alongside hard. Trusting in his provision.
Yes. Okay, so can I share some don'ts?
Please. And Erin, you can
this
be honest
this is the part my
us.
Family really had fun with.
I love that you shared
so
this
many
with them.
Funny things. So I once heard a comedian say, and I hope that no one thinks this is offensive, but that if you wouldn't say it about a boob job, you shouldn't say it to an adoptive family.
Oh my gosh. I need you to say it again. Okay.
If you wouldn't say it about someone's boob job, like fake boobs.
Yeah. Got it.
Don't say it about an adoption.
Walk us through that. Clarify. So,
there's so many small little questions that we actually get all the time. Where did you get those? How much did it cost?
Okay.
Are they really yours? There's so many questions that could fall into both categories. So that's just a good filter. Like, if it's too
that
personal to say about a body part, don't say it about their children. Like, and especially in front of their children.
Because, Erin, have you had that before?
So many times. I mean, and honestly, most of the time it's total strangers. It's not people we even know, which makes it even more shocking.
So like, they'll just come up to you yeah. and even though these are humans and not some sort of procedure done on your body, they'll right. say, yeah. are those yours?
Yes. Do you know what happened to their real parents? That's what I've gotten a lot.
Their real
in
parents?
In front of my children.
Yeah. Tell us. Yeah. Okay, tell us a bit.
I feel like almost all of them are at Target.
You meet incredible people at Target.
Yes, in the checkout line is when people, I think because you're kind of stuck standing there and people... Our family is noticeable. Mm-hmm. I mean, because I have 5 kids. I have 2 white ones, mm-hmm. a really dark chocolatey one, mm-hmm. and some 2 milk chocolatey
ones.
You do. Right?
You do. And it's such a beautiful family, but
it
you
is.
Would gain looks when
but
you're
people,
walking around.
People are trying to figure us out.
Yeah.
And I get that. It just naturally draws your eye. We're human. We're curious. We look and we're mm-hmm. trying to be like, how can I make sense of this?
Right. So the truth is you do look different than other families.
Yeah, we do. And we're okay with it.
Yeah.
We know it. We talk about it all the time. We don't want our kids to feel any shame about that they're not the same shade as their brother or sister. But it is really weird for a stranger to say, are they all yours? Mm-hmm. Are you babysitting?
That and that thing you said earlier, I feel like we need to address that. Are these your real kids?
Yes.
Take us through that.
That is a big one. And honestly, that one most people don't say in front of my kids. And sometimes it's like, it can also be phrased as, do you have any kids of your own? Mm-hmm. Referring to my biological mm-hmm. kids. And I always politely say, they're all my own. And a big smile that is also very much sending a message of, please
right.
don't tell my child in front of them that they are not mine or that
you're
they're loved less.
You're affirming in front of your
yeah.
children.
And I don't think people realize people are just stating factual observations mm. because they're human. But our kids are humans too. And they already have questions about, do I fit here the same? Mm. Every day. That's mm-hmm. just part of their life. Part of their reality is, I know I'm different, but do I have the same value here? Mm. So when someone asks, do you have any kids of your own? That somehow infers to them mm-hmm. that they're not as important as the biological kids mm-hmm. or whatever. But anyway, sorry, that one makes me emotional. It's kind of a
you never
hot
you don't have to apologize for that because
so yes, don't ask them if they're your own. I recently had a mom, I was at a dinner, a gal that I didn't know, and we were all just sharing about our families, and somehow birth stories came up, and I don't have a birth story for my twins because I wasn't there. They were not a part of our life yet. And so she said, oh, they're adopted, so they're not your own. And I was like, no, like, they are very much my own. And they are very real, and they create very real messes, and I feed them very real food. And I love them in a very real way, and they are our own. And I don't think people realize how that, the weight of that question when it gets asked. Well, it's a big one.
And I don't think people do realize it, and that's why this conversation that we're having right now is so important, because we do want to realize, we do want to know how we add harm to an already really complex situation.
I feel like it's delicate. It's just...
It's delicate.
It's complicated and delicate. Softly. Tread lightly. If you hesitate to ask the question, don't ask. Or wait until you have the mom privately, and then you say, can I ask you a really personal question? And you can tell me no.
When you have the mom privately.
When you have a private.
Not in front of.
Yeah, because I really am an open book, and I will share almost anything except for those really private details of my kids' stories. You could ask me, I would absolutely welcome a question of, is it harder to love an adopted child than my biological child? I would happily answer that question if it's asked in a protected, safe place, you know? So,
what about,
we've also gotten like, are they really your brother? Are they really your sister? And it,
your kids get asked those questions.
You know, like the, even the bus situation I mentioned earlier, and that's just another child observing. And sometimes children are the worst because kids just don't have a filter. So they just say what's on their mind. So our kids have had to learn to be gracious sometimes.
And so that means we as listeners, if we have children, we can teach our children to be gracious. So you would suggest that we talk about
Even one example, we had a little neighbor girl who, it was the sweetest thing. It had somehow come up that Lucy was born in Ethiopia. And she was like, oh, did you all live in Ethiopia? And it had not even crossed her mind that Lucy was different than us.
Oh, and, there's something really, really beautiful about that.
And we had just had another hard thing. Hard conversation with one of my other kids sharing private details of his sister's story that she didn't wish to be shared. And she was about seven. So it was still hard for her to voice her own voice, really, to say, I don't want to share that with a stranger. And it was on a bus. Lots of weird things happen on school buses. But so we were kind of practicing, and it was such a perfect opportunity where she kind of looked at me in this moment of panic. Like, what do I do, Mom? Because I said, oh, well, would you like to tell her? Or would you like, do you want her to know? And she said, yes, but will you tell her? And I said, sure, I'll tell her. So I very carefully just said, oh, I guess you didn't know. Lucy was adopted and she was born in Ethiopia. And she came to live with us when she was a baby. And she said, oh my gosh, she's adopted. I had no idea. And it was the sweetest thing. But I think empowering our kids to say, just because you ask me doesn't mean I have to tell you everything. And I think that's good for all kids to have that voice,
that empowerment.
To just say, just because an adult asks me a question or anybody doesn't mean I have to share my really personal things. So it was kind of a important.
And that question was asked in...
That was just one of her best friends.
Non-threatening, just...
But when like a strange lady walks up to my shopping cart where my three little brown kids are in... And says, do you know what happened to their real parents? Like, that's a moment where I'm going to say, I do know. And I'm not going to share it with you.
So for all of us listening, let's just all vow right now that we're not going to use that language with people, families that we see that
look
different than ours.
And I said this, I welcome deeply personal questions in a, like, safe, respected way. Not in a way that makes my kids feel different or other or less valued or just from a stranger who doesn't have the right to ask those that level of personal questions. And I think there's something unique about adoption that somehow welcomes people's factual observations that nothing else does. Like, you don't walk up to someone and ask them some, like, why are your ears so big?
Right.
You know?
Right. And so why would we
Why would you walk up and say something that is really personal? So.
And I think there's, I think, Erin, the truth is, for those of us that have not experienced adoption in the way that your family has, we have to acknowledge that we don't understand. Yeah. And so if ever we're going to ask a question to be more careful than not.
So just tread lightly. Tread I think that's a really good motto for it. And I know that people see us and they wonder. People wonder about us. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with the wondering and even the looking sometimes. Other than sometimes my kids, I worry, like, do they feel like zoo animals where everyone's looking?
I do think people might look because your kids are so cute.
Well, they are pretty cute.
Right? Like, as a mom who loves little people,
yes.
I would stare at your cart in Target because they're so cute.
And they say usually funny things. They say really funny things.
And they would ask for a hug or something. They would.
And, yes. So, I'm comfortable with the looking. A lot of times I think it's just a normal human thing to do. Mm-hmm. What I would love if people would do is just say, what a sweet family you have. Or, what a lovely family. Or, your kids are so cute. Or,
If they feel the need to say something.
And I feel like there's like this awkward moment where you look at someone and they realize that you see them looking and they're not sure what to do. So they say something and a lot of times it comes out awkward.
And what you should just say is
your family's so sweet or cute or whatever. Just be friendly to them. Mm. I recently had an older gentleman, I think he was probably a grandpa, at Target, and he saw I had all five of my kids at Target, which I really try not to do because it's not fun for anybody. But he put his hand on my shoulder. We were in line to pay, and he just said, "You have such a lovely family." And I nearly cried on the spot because no one ever says that to me. Mm. They ask weird questions or they try. I've also had people just say the most awkward things. One time, a lady tried to say, "Oh, she has your eyes." And I'm like, No, she doesn't actually. She's from Ethiopia, and I am as white as it gets. We do not have the same eyes, but she just didn't know what else to say. Mm-hmm. But I just appreciated, like, he acknowledged that my family
is different,
but in a really kind way, and in a way that was just gentle, and I appreciated it. And I kind of felt like he must have some personal understanding.
You can probably tell that sometimes when people have an empathy.
Yes.
Because perhaps they
there's have some kind of familiarity, like he knew what I didn't need to hear at the store.
Well, Erin, I so appreciate you doing this. I appreciate having you in your life and your family really being an example to the rest of us of how we can trust the Lord, ask him about the tough things, follow his leading when he places things on our hearts. And you, to me, have been such an exemplary woman in how you have handled this. Mm. And your ability to be a resource for others in this podcast is another example of that, how you will give of your time and your energy and your heart to share the tough things and the joys and give us some advice. And so, Erin, you have a lovely family.
Thank you. And I feel like it's so important to acknowledge, too, like, we do not do it perfectly.
No.
There's been so many mistakes. And I think our mistakes look different than a lot of other families' mistakes. And it's really important for families that look like ours to know that other people in the same situation make mistakes too. And we're...
So we extend grace.
Yeah.
So we are going to put some resources that you have found helpful on the blog. When you go to this podcast, we'll have some notes there with some of those resources that Erin has found helpful. And we hope at Arise Ministries Collective that this question and answer time about adoption has inspired you, encouraged you, offered you some sort of help in a way that you can either walk alongside or consider some of these things yourself. Thank you.